come to my study of the book of Lamentations. I want to say just a word or two by way of introducing the book before we get into it. First of all, in the Hebrew Bible, the old Hebrew text, says this is not the name given to it, but the old name was Ham, or Alak. You'll notice that chapters 1, 2, and 4 begin with the word Ham. How is the gold the guns here, and how did the city solitary shore? So that they just had the name Ham, or Alak. It was not until down in the sector jump, and that was really translated until somewhere around 250, 275. This name, Lamentations of Jeremiah, was given to the book. In fact, Jeremiah himself is not named in the book at all, or mentioned in it. There are a lot of people who have questioned whether or not Jeremiah is the author of these poems. There are five of them. Tell you about that in a moment. But I think there's no really doubt or question that he is dealing with the destruction of Jerusalem and the lamenting over. Now, a lamentation was often written by a poet or someone lamenting the death of a friend or the death of a great one. It's really a funeral dirge or wailing, lamenting that which has happened. Now these poems, the five of them, these are written in lamentation or sorrow or grief over the destruction of Jerusalem. They're written after the city was destroyed. Now, I think Jeremiah is the author. But the question is when he wrote these poems, I don't know. There are five of them. The first, the second, and the fourth they seem to go in more of a sequence than the third that is brought in between the second and the fourth. For tonight, if time permits, I'm going to read the first, second, and the fourth. The next time, we will take the third and the fifth. Right, so, there are five poems. Now, one of the characteristics of the poems I mentioned last time is that they follow the pattern of an acrostic, especially the first four. The first four will have each stanza or each verse here will begin with a letter of the Hebrew alphabet, then the next one and the next one on through. However, there's one exception, I think, in three of these poems, 1, 2, and 4. That is, at one place, two of the letters are reversed. Why? I don't know. So, and I don't even remember which of those two letters. Yeah, and it wouldn't make that much difference. Try to remember them. But at any rate, they follow the form of an acrostic. And an acrostic is an alphabetic poem. Right? Then in the third chapter, right, you have three verses instead of one verse of two lines. You have three lines that begin with the same letter. You'll notice that if you look through there, the 1, 2, and 3, all of those begin with the same letter. Then 4, 5, and 6 begins with the second letter, and that carries you through verse 6 to 6. For there were 22 letters in the Hebrew alphabet. Right? Now the fourth follows the same pattern of 1 and 2. Now the fifth has the 22 verses, but this is not an acrostic. I mean, it does not follow the letter form, one letter following another letter. It may be that the poet wanted to say some things here that he was handicapped in following that alphabetic form. Now, the 119th Psalm is an alphabetic psalm. There are a number, something about 3 or 4, maybe 5, of the psalms are alphabetic. One of them isn't complete. One or two others have some letters reversed. To me, in reading an acrostic psalm, it always seemed that they were somewhat forced. That they were, artificial. Is that a good word? That was an artificial epithet to make each of these follow with begin with a word that began with a certain letter. And sometimes the thought was not as smooth as it could have been otherwise. But I will say this, it took a very smart person to have written one like that. Of course, they wrote the inspiration of why they selected that method, I don't know. Now, that 119th Psalm is a psalm glorifying and praising the Word and the law of God. In fact, in every verse of the 172 or 6, whichever it is, of all those verses, there are only three that do not at some point praise the law or the commandment or the Word of God. Three of them don't. And all the rest of them eulogize the Word of God, the law of God, and so on. It makes it very interesting for them. It's primarily for meditation rather than for just reading, more for meditation. Right now we come back to our lamentation. Now, Jeremiah, the city has fallen. Now, what he is doing in this first one is expressing sorrow and wailing over the fall of Jerusalem and over Judah. Now, in the second, it's a little more the lamentation over the judgment here and destruction becomes more pronounced. It's more deep expression. Now, in the fourth one, that's what I want to try to read these three tonight. Why, in it, it even becomes more severe as he deals with it and as he presents a contrast between the former glory and the present destruction of the city. Now, you want to notice this in reading it. But actually, to me, the book is monotonous. It's quite monotonous. Because it's going over the same thing so much. And yet, we're trying to look at that. We forget that. Because it's the expression of the deep sorrow and grief of the prophet who had done so much to try to save his people from destruction. But not only that, he personifies the city itself. So we come in one of them, I think the second, where the city is personified as doing its own wailing for itself. Then you're going to notice the terrible condition of the little city. Read your heart as you read the suffering of these little children and the old people in there. But remember, and I think you ought to read Deuteronomy 28 in connection with this, and also Leviticus 26. Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28 both were prophecies of the ultimate destruction of Jerusalem and what would happen if they followed the way of the nation in sin. But they followed that. So this is what happened. But Moses had foretold much of what would happen even back there in his day if they did that. So sometime between now and next Monday night, try to take time, at least read the 28th chapter of Deuteronomy. Read that chapter. Then I think it will give more meaning to this lamentative five poems when you read it. All right? We're coming now to the reading of the poem itself, and we're not a great deal of time. But all this expresses itself, you know. So the first few verses, the first 11 verses here, is a lament over the sad condition of the city, which is now forsaken of her friends. She has neither God nor friends. The city is alone. It's destroyed, and the people are alone. How does the city sit solitary? That was full of people. She has become as a widow. That was great among the nations. She is as a widow who has lost her husband, lost her children. And here she sits alone in her grief. Here is the remains of the city that has been destroyed. Alone there, the people are gone into captivity. No one there. She sits alone in her grief and in her sorrow. She that was a princess among the property is a contributory, that is, become just one of the material princes among them. We think of a princess as beautiful. Great possibility of the teacher as being a queen and also the mother of kings. But here she is as it was of a princess, but now it becomes tributary. That is, she belongs to another. She's a tributary of the nation. She belongs to them. She leaves sore in the night, and her tears are on her cheek. Among all her lovers, she hath none to comfort her. All her friends have dealt treacherously with her. They have become her enemies. Look at the sadness of that. Here she sits weeping in a distress. Her friends and her lovers are forsaken. The idols in whom she put so much trust, faith, because they were not enemies, the nation that had made alliances with her, had failed in the moment of need. So here she sits, not only as a widow, but as one forsaken of all of her friends. Very sad picture. Judah is gone into captivity because of affliction and because of great servitude, probably out of affliction and servitude. Under probably what you say, she dwelleth among the nations. She findeth no rest. All her persecutors overtook her within the straits. Now the straits is where you are pressed together. Here she was pressed in on every side, and her enemies overtook her. And we come after a while to the third of these, or maybe the fifth, is all of this to Jehovah. Jehovah's judgment. Now I want to leave that to talk about later. Now she's gone into captivity, persecuted, overtook her. The ways of Zion be known. Now that's the highways that lead, the roads that lead to the city. The ways of Zion be known, because none come to the solemn assembly. All her gates are desolate. Her priests do shout, for they've been carried away. Her virgins are afflicted, and she herself is in death. Right? Now, the roads that lead up to Zion, the one over which the people used to travel, singing, praising God, coming up to the great assembly there of the three festivals a year and other occasions, those highways are now desolate. The gates are broken down. The virgin that used to sing and dance play, leave no longer of their affliction. And she herself, Zion herself, is in bitterness. And here also are her priests here. They're not there. The priests be silent, carried away. No more do they offer the sacrifice, for that to be offered only in Jerusalem. Her adversaries are become the head. Her enemies prosper. For Jehovah hath afflicted her for the multitude of the transgressors. Now don't overlook that. Jehovah hath afflicted her for the multitude of her transgressions. Her young children are gone into captivity before her adversary. Let's go back for just a moment to Deuteronomy 28, 43 to 44, 5, to get the idea there of the head. For she had been the head, now then, nations are the head. Beginning here with about verse 43 is a good place to stop. But he said in 42 there, she shall go into captivity. All thy trees and the fruit of thy ground shall the locust possess. The sojourner that is in the midst of thee, that's 28, 99, verse 43, in the midst of thee shall mount up above thee higher and higher, and thou shalt come down lower and lower. He shall lend to thee, and thou shalt not lend to him. He shall be the head, and thou shalt be the tail. And all these curses shall come upon thee, and shall pursue thee, and overtake thee, till thou be destroyed, because thou hearkenest not unto the voice of Jehovah thy God, to keep his commandments and his statutes, which he commanded thee. And they shall be upon thee for a sign, and for a wonder, and upon thy seed forever. Once they were cast out, they would never come back as once they had been. It's forever. All right. And it was, they came back, but not as they had been. Not in the greatness that they had been. So when it says here in verse 5, the adversaries have become the head. And God had said in that 28th chapter, that as long as you obey my commandments and law, you'll be the head and the nations will be the tail. Now, when you don't, the nations will become the head, you will become the tail. You'll be the one that's cast down. You'll be the bring up the rear. Alright? And your young children are gone into captivity. Jehovah afflicted her. And verse 6. And from the daughter of Zion, all her majesty is departed. That's all of her glory. All of her beauty is departed. Now the daughter of Zion simply, we've had that expression a number of times in Jeremiah, indicates the people of Zion. The people who belong to God, the people of Zion. Her princes are become like hearts. They find no pasture. The heart or stag might be a better word there. The stag or the heart, the male deer have become a male deer or a deer that find no pasture. And they're gone without strength before the pursuer. Now notice that her princes. Now they're the daughters of Zion, the daughter of the people of lost their majesty. The princes have become as hearts without any pasture. They become weak, and the heart that has no, or the stag that has no pasture becomes weak, and the pursuers overtake it. So they become weak, and the pursuers overtake them. Jerusalem remembered in the days of her affliction and of her miseries all the pleasant things that were from the days of old. When her people fell into the hand of the adversary, and none did help her, the adversary saw her, they did mock at her desolation. And go back and look at that. Now Jerusalem, while in her affliction, remembered those good days. I imagine she remembered something else, don't you? How the God warned her of what would happen. I imagine they remembered that. But to look back and think of the good days that are now gone.
Well, as I said this today, this verse, I thought, how much time
it has been. Someday. Now, someday, when we've hit the bottom, we're going to look back over these good days when we didn't, when the people forgot God, it's more interested in spiritual matters.
And nobody came to help.
And no, that's right. We helped everybody in the world, but now then, when we get down, nobody can be able to help. That's right. Yes, sir. Well, I say, I don't know where it is. I don't know whether he, there is a tradition among the Hebrew Jews that you went on into Egypt and stayed until the Babylonian invasion. You remember last time, or the time that we read that Nebuchadnezzar would invade Babylon, and where Jeremiah put down those stones, he there put his pavilion. You remember that?
Right. Or,
now, the Hebrews have a tradition that when Nebuchadnezzar came down, he carried Jeremiah back with him and made his life very pleasant for him for the rest of the life. But that's a tradition. I don't put much stock in Hebrew tradition. So really, I don't know whether he was down there or he carried him there into Babylon and wrote in Babylon, we don't know. We lose sight of him in Egypt. That's the last sight of his head. So I would just presume, unless that tradition is correct, that he was carried into Babylon by Nebuchadnezzar, that he wrote this while he was there. Now, if not, he could have written it, you might have gone back past Jerusalem, and he didn't carry back to Babylon, and have written it later. So we'll have to say we don't know. Alright. But none would help her. The adversary mocked at a desolation. Now, firstly, Jerusalem had grievously sinned. Therefore, she had become as an unclean thing. All that honored her despised her, because they have seen her naked. That is, what she really is. And the Bible speaks of stripping a person naked, or stripping a city naked. It indicates you will now be seen what you really are. A person you're wearing the fine outer garments, you don't really see him as he is. Stripping, you see him now as he is. And this is the point of it. You will be seen, for what you really are. And this is the point that I have seen her method, what she really is. Yea, she sitteth and turneth back. She turns her back that people might not see it in a true light. Awful picture, isn't it? It's an unclean thing. Now, you remember the Levitical law, back the old law, the other Levitical law. A thing unclean was put out of the camp. Certain ceremonies to cleanse it. Well, she is as an unclean thing and turns her back to those who look upon her. Her filthiness was in the spirit. Her filthiness was a sin, a corruption, her idolatry. She remembered not the latter, her latter end. And if she didn't remember what God said would come of all that filthiness, therefore if she come down wonderfully, she had no comfort. Behold, O Jehovah, my affliction, for the enemy hath magnified himself against Zion. Zion speaking, the prophet, speaking for Zion and for the people, and the enemy magnified himself. The adversary has spread out his hands upon all her present things, that is all the precious things that Judah and the Jerusalem people had. The enemy carried them away. Carried away those things, the gold, the silver, the precious stones, the things of the temple there, vessels of the temple. For she hath seen that the nations are entered into the sanctuary at the temple, concerning whom thou didst command that they should not enter into thine assembly. You remember we mentioned that last time in reading one of the prophecies, either in Ezekiel or Isaiah or Jeremiah 1, what God would do under the Babylonians because of how that they had treated the people and how that they had entered into the sanctuary and defiled it. No regard for God, though they admitted that God was the one that was using them. And he said, all the people sigh. They seek bread. They have given that pleasant thing for food to refresh the soul. See, O Jehovah, and behold, for I am become abject, cast down. Now here, I think the prophet is speaking for the city. The city speaks, he speaks, he speaks for it. That gives you a picture now of the destruction of it, but the picture is going to get dark as we go on. And I want to make this observation now, and I will make it again later. But I think I want you to keep it before you here as we read the terribleness here of this judgment. Here's the terribleness of the judgment and of the destruction that came, and of the suffering that came to the people and the little children and all of them. What was back of that? What was back of that? Sin. Don't forget the back here is sin. Terrible sin of the people. And the judgment is simply commensurate with the terribleness of the sin. So while you're reading that, and you're simply to go down to David, remember, they brought it on themselves. Sin must always have its recompense. The wages of sin has always been death. It always will be. That's the wage of sin. And this teaches us how terrible the sins of the people have actually been. And Jeremiah, Isaiah, Ezekiel, all of them despised. But you and I can't grasp how terrible the sins were. If I were to try to describe the sins of this country, I couldn't. I can't comprehend what people are doing in the dark recesses of the cesspools of sin about us today. I don't know what they're doing. I can read, I can call the word, but I can't comprehend it. And back of it, the terribleness of sin. Alright, that's the first half of this. The second, the B part, is the city herself now is wailing and weeping here, her condition, and it's all because of the sin. Is it nothing to you, all ye that pass by? Behold and see if there be any sorrow like unto my sorrow, which is brought upon. Now this is the city speaking, wailing her condition. People pass by, and they wag their hand at. Yeah, there's a great city. There's a city so wonderful. Look what it's been brought to. Look what it is now. The city destroyed, the walls destroyed. Just a bunch of rubble left. Where will Jehovah have afflicted me in the day of his fierce anger? But I want you to know whom Jehovah hath afflicted. God had brought that affliction. Now, whether we like it or not, and this is the thing that people sometimes criticize. They say pictures like this present God as a monster, as terrible. No. First, before the judgment, is always his love and loving effort to bring people to repentance. What did he do to try to save Jerusalem before the Romans destroyed it? Well, not only he sent his prophet, he sent his son. And what did they do? They crucified him. What did they do to his saints? They drove them out of the city. They killed them, drove them out of the city. Then they asked for what they got. So don't forget that sin demands judgment. And it's always, as I pointed out in Jeremiah and other passages, the scales must be balanced. Balancing of the scales of what it is. All right? On high had he sent fire into my bones, and it prevaileth against them. That was against my bones. He hath spread a net for my feet. He hath turned me back. He hath made me desolate and faint all the day. Jerusalem speaking now. The yoke of my transgressions is bound by his hand. They are knit together. They come up upon my neck. He hath made my strength to fail to stumble. The Lord has delivered me into their hands, against whom I'm not able to stand. Now there, Jerusalem, prophet speaking for Jerusalem, talking about the transgressions are bound together. Yet Jerusalem is bound in a sense. Hand and foot and neck, she's bound in her sin. I think you're right about this kind. I think bound in his sin. Today, individuals are. Nations become that way. And after a while, judgment is an effort. Alright? And I'm not able to stand. The Lord has set it north, all my mighty men in the midst of me. That's the army that set it north. He hath called a solemn assembly against me to crush my young men. The Lord hath trodden as in a wine press the virgin daughter of Judah. Now you have that treading the wine press. Isaiah 63, verse 1 to 6. Who is this that comes from Bozrah? In diagram, Jehovah answered, I am he, mighty to save. Why are your garments red? Jehovah answered, from treading the wine press of my wrath. I did try to tread it alone. He'd been executing judgment against the Edomites. And the figure there is that of treading the wine press. And the grapes burst, and the blood, the grape juice burst up, a lot of splashes. The garments of the end of it. Same thing, Revelation 19, of the destruction of Rome, the Roman Empire, treading the wine press of the wrath of God. So here, it was God, the Lord, hath trodden as in a wine press the virgin daughter of Judah. So he does to his own people what he did to other people when his people became so wicked they were no longer fit to exist. That's the lesson I think we need to learn. For these things I weep. Now Zion is speaking. Zion says, I weep. Mine eye runneth down with water. I'll notice that three or four more times later on. Because the comforter that should refresh our soul is far from. That is no friend, no comfort to comfort the soul. My children are desperate, for the enemy hath prevailed. Now Zion speaks here as a mother. The children are the individual. Now you have that same figure in Hosea. Hosea presents that Jehovah is the husband, Israel is the wife, and the mother of the individual. The individuals are the children. So this is a figure that's used over and over in the Old Testament. So here he says, then the children are desolate because the enemy has prevailed. The enemy has overcome them, the only reason, because they have left God. God had told them that as long as you trust me, no enemy will ever prevail against you. And no enemy ever did. But when they left God, now then they were just as any other nation, and the nation could treat them that way. The Zion spread forth her hand, there was none to comfort her. Right? Now the poet is speaking now. Jehovah had commanded concerning Jacob that they that are round about him should be his adversaries. So round about Jacob, round about the people. Jerusalem is among them as an unclean thing. The people were as unclean. Now then, their Jerusalem was unclean. There are some things, class, that were cleansed by blood. There were some things, but because the writer of Hebrews said, I'm an almost say, that all things are cleansed by blood. And without the shedding of blood, there is no remission. Now, apart from shedding of blood, there's no remission. But he said, I'm an almost say that all things are cleansed by blood. When he said almost, that means that some things are not cleansed by blood, does it? Huh? Well, what are they cleansed by? By fire. So Jerusalem, in its corruptness, was cleansed by fire. As the city was burning. And so sometimes it's cleansed by fire. Alright? Now he said, Jehovah is righteous. Now notice this admission that it was a righteous judgment. 4:1 Romans 2 says that the righteous judgment of God, when the judgment falls on a nation or an individual, it always is from God. You have to admit it's a righteous judgment. What a time of God. Jehovah is righteous, for I have rebelled against his commandments. Here I pray you, all ye people, and behold, my sorrow, the people of the nations, my virgins and my young men have gone into captivity. So an over and over statement of that because of her own condition, it was a righteous judgment, she had forsaken God. Now I call for my lovers, for they deceived. My priests and mine elders gave up the ghost in the city, while they sought them food to refresh their souls. Now the lovers may here be the idols, or they may be the nations which courted her faith. The idols are sometimes mentioned as the nations of love. Probably here in this case, the lovers are her neighbors, those nations with whom she made her alliance that have now forsaken her. They delivered me up. I called for them, but they didn't answer. And the priests and the rulers there, the elders, they didn't take any interest in the people. Behold, O Jehovah, for I am in distress. My heart is troubled. And notice the appeal now is to Jehovah. Zion appeals to Jehovah. I'm troubled. My heart is turned within, for I grievously rebel. Abroad the sword believeth, at home there is as death. So here you leave the city, you're killed. Stay at the sword. Stay in the city, and you die. So those who stayed in the city, those that tried to leave, many of them are killed. The others that stayed, they died. They have heard that I sigh. There is none to comfort me. All my enemies have heard of my trouble. They are glad that thou hast done it. Now notice, they are glad that thou hast done it. Now God condemned that idea in a number of the prophets. People have trapped their hands in grief over the fall and destruction of a nation. Now, when a nation falls, people suffer. The great suffering. And we have no ground on which to rejoice in that, nor to clap our hands in grief over it. Now, the only exception, I guess, is in Nahum, where they clapped their hands over the fall of Assyria. But that actually was recognition that God's judgment had finally been executed. They had that coming. Art glad that thou hast done it. I will bring the day that thou hast proclaimed, and they shall be like unto me. Alright? Now their day will come. Now you remember we had that in Jeremiah. Jeremiah over and over pointed out, or at least in those of the nations, that which God did unto Zion, someday he will do unto them. So now as they rejoice in the fall of Zion, so someday what happened to Zion will happen to them. Alright. And so we rejoice in the fall of a nation, may it come to us someday. Let all that wickedness come before thee. That's the wickedness of the nation. and do unto them as thou hast done unto me for all my transgressions. For my sighs are many, and my heart is faint. Not a pathetic picture. They're great, wonderful, beautiful city, the city of God, in which the temple of God was. Now the people came to worship God, but their rebellion and their rejection and their sins and their wicked have now finally brought about a judgment against them. But now, these cities that, these nations that did, and the city that rejoiced, let it come back upon them. And it did. It did. Well, any question over that? Any question over that? I think with the reading of it, we understand it and see it. Have a question over it. Yes. No, because it's the city, and now sometimes he is speaking for the city, but it's the city because it passed by the city that's in destruction. Zion, Jerusalem is destroyed, and as she sits desolate, though they pass by, and no sympathy for them. And Jeremiah's expressing it. Sometimes Jeremiah's speaking, but he's generally speaking for the people, sometimes for himself. Now, I think later on in one of these poems, it's more himself, the third one maybe. All right, now the lamentation here over the judgment of destruction here that has come on Zion and Jerusalem here. It's a more bitter lamentation now. More bitter lamentation even the other. Yet the destruction that came through the judgment. How hath the Lord covered the daughter of Zion with a cloud in his anger? That is, if you cover a star, cover the sun, or cover the moon with a cloud. So the city is covered now. He hath cast down from heaven under the earth the beauty of Israel, and have not remembered his footstool in the day of his anger. But Jerusalem, his throne was there, his footstool was there. Here was his throne, the center of the footstool. God was there. This is the thing to the Jew that he couldn't comprehend. This was the city of God, temple of God. God was there. How can you treat the city like that? They forget what they've done, how they treated God. Alright? He goes on here. The Lord has swallowed up all the habitations of Jacob and hath not pitied. He hath thrown down in his wrath the strongholds of the border of Judah. He hath brought them down to the ground. He hath profaned the kingdom and the princes thereof. Now notice, he is ascribing this to Jehovah. We had that all the way through Jeremiah. God said he would do it. God would bring the judgment. Now, when the judgment came, the prophet, the poet recognizes that God brought the judgment. But he said it's a righteous judgment, Jerusalem said. He had cut off in fierce anger all the horn of Israel. Now the horn now looks back up to stronghold in the second line there. Thrown down the wrath of stronghold. That is the horn, the place of strength. That was a place of strength there. He had drawn back his right hand from before the enemy, and it burned up Jacob like a flaming fire, which devoured round about. Now, in other words, that recognized the hand of God holds back the enemy. Now, when God removes the restraining hand, then what happens? Destruction follows that. Right? So this is the thought here, that God has removed that restraining hand and let the enemy burn Jacob like a flaming fire. He had bent his bow, that is Jehovah had. He had bent his bow like an enemy. He had stood with his right hand as an adversary, and had slain all were pleasant to the eye. That is, the people were pleasant to the human eye. From a human point of view, he had destroyed the Godhead. Because to him, they were the abomination of wickedness, the day they lived. In the tent of the daughter of Zion, he had poured out his wrath like fire. That is, the tent of the daughter of Zion symbolizes all of the dwellings of the people in Zion, in Jerusalem. They've all been burned, they've all been destroyed. Now notice that all of this the Lord does it. The description is the Lord is become as an enemy, he has swallowed up Israel, that is a nation, as a people. And all the way through, it's God that moved the restraining hand. It was God that cast down the stronghold. It was God that used the bow, shooting the bow. It was God here set the city afire. The Lord has become as an enemy. He has swallowed up Israel, the nation, the people. He has swallowed up all her palaces. He has destroyed her strongholds. And he has multiplied in the daughter of Judah mourning and lamentation. Now this destruction has brought about mourning and lamentation in the city. And Jeremiah is trying to catch the spirit of that and put it down here on paper. Preserve it for us. That mourning and lamentation of the city and of the people are over here. Personifies the city and then the people here. And if Solomon had taken away his tabernacle, that would be his temple there. And as if it were of a garden, he had destroyed his place of a center. That is, you will destroy a garden. Here's a garden. Now, you just go out there and destroy the garden. So he destroyed the beautiful temple. He destroyed all of that. The place of assembly. Jehovah had called solemn assembly and Sabbath to be forgotten in Zion. Now, the solemn assembly would be, of course, those gatherings together there. The appointed feast there that God had appointed there. And the place of worship. God destroyed all that now. And remember, Clarence, that the Hebrew, whenever God said his name, there they would meet for worship. They could not offer sacrifices anywhere else. They did, and that was brought to judgment. But when they got into Babylon, there's no account of their ever offering a sacrifice in Babylon. Now, they built the synagogues. Now, the synagogues were places where they meant to read the law, to chant hymns, to pray, to do all that. But they didn't burn a sacrifice. That had to be in Jerusalem. So there was no solemn assembly, there was no sacrifices offered. And he despised in the indignation of his anger the king and the priest. Now that would be both the civil and religious leader. He had, in his anger, he had destroyed and despised them. So they're the one that brought it on. It's all on this plant that he's led in it. The Lord has cast off his altar. Here they abhor his sanctuary and the altar, where the sacrifices were offered, where the incense was burnt. God's abhorred that. He had given up into the hand of the enemy the walls of the palaces. The walls of the palace of the city, they, that is the enemy, had made a noise in the house of Jehovah as in the day of a solemn assembly. That is, they'd gone into the temple. And there they shouted and rejoiced over the taking of the temple and the desecration of desecrated of the temple that the enemy did that. Jehovah has purpose to destroy the wall of the daughter of Zion. Now notice it is God's purpose. It was not accidental. He has stretched out the line. He has not withdrawn his hand from destroying it. Right? Now that stretching the line, that indicates with precision. You stretch a line, you build a wall with precision, don't you? That God with that same kind of precision has destroyed the country, has destroyed the city. And that made the rampart and wall to the net. They languish together. That is the rampart, that's the place of protection, and the wall of it. The rampart with the top of it, that is it on top of the wall, to the net together. Her gates are sunk into the ground. He had destroyed and broken her bars. It's the bars that would keep out the enemy. But kings and princes are among the nations where the law is not. That they've been carried away into captivity. Where the law is not. Where the worship is not recognized. Yea, her prophets find no vision from Jehovah. That's a false prophet. They were carried away, find no vision from God. Now you notice this in our study that the Bible doesn't make a distinction in word between the false prophet and the true prophet. The false prophets are never called in the Old Testament false prophets. That word's not found there. It's found in 2 Peter, talks about the false prophets. They're not in the Old Testament. Right? They're all called prophets. but they weren't false. They didn't teach the truth. They spoke a lie back there. We run into them, a number of them back there in our study of Jeremiah. I keep that in mind. When we talk about a prophet's here, they found no vision from Jehovah. The elders of the daughter of Zion sit upon the ground. They keep silence. That is in deep humiliation. And here are the elders, the elders that used to sit in solemn judgment. Now then, they are now sitting in deep humiliation. They have cast up dust upon their head. They have girded themselves with sackcloth. Now, if I had the time, I should take the time, if you wanted to, we could do it. Go back and examine a number of passages in Job that are very similar to this. And I'm persuaded that you could, if you studied it carefully, find a good many similarities between the Lamentations and the book of Job. No doubt, Jeremiah was fairly familiar with the book of Job. I feel confident that he was. Some similarities there. Now, Holy Father, the virgins of Jerusalem hang down their heads to the ground. These virgins that sang and danced and were so happy, that had part in the worship and occasions of it, now that they're hanging their heads down to the ground, mine eyes be filled with tears, my heart is troubled, my liver is pulled up from the earth. That is, the inner pain is what he describes here. An inner pain and the liver as though it were poured out upon the cause of the destruction of the daughter of my people. Now, it's in Lamentation that the tears of the prophet are mentioned so many times, and it is. He weeps the fall of his people and the sufferings of it. And he said, because the young children and the suckling swoon in the streets of the city. Now, look at the terrible misery of that. Here are your little children, young children, right? The little lad here and the little infants, and they're looking for something to eat. They're worrying, they're crying for food. They're without food. And it's all the result of the sins of their parents. God had warned them over and over that this would come. This is, of course, the result of the cruelty of the enemies. That's true. And the suckling swoon the streets of the city. They say to their mothers, where is grain and wine? When the swoon is the wound in the streets of the city, when our soul is poured out into their mother's bosom. Did you see the pathos of that? Here's a little child comes to mother crying for something to eat, crying for a glass of milk, pouring out in the bosom of the mother this plaintive cry. The mother can't get anything. There isn't anything there. It's all gone. No food gone. What shall I testify unto thee? What shall I liken to the old daughter of Jerusalem? That is, what comfort can a human being give unto them in that condition? What shall I compare to thee that I may comfort thee, old virgin daughter of Zion? There was no comfort. The mother couldn't comfort. The prophet couldn't comfort. Human being couldn't comfort. For thy breach is great like the sea. Who can heal thee? Only God. And they rejected him. From the total rejection of God, their trust in their idols and their neighbors, and those nations that they made alliances with, Egypt and Assyria and others, that they can't help. They don't help. They'll let that. Like the prophets have seen for thee false and foolish visions. Now we have several of those back in Jeremiah, Micah, also and others. They have seen foolish visions, and they have not uncovered thy iniquity to bring back thy captivity, but have seen for thee false oracles and causes of banishment. I want you to just look at Micah. Or look at Micah there. I've read this to you many times on other passages. But in Micah, the second chapter here, and verse 11. Micah 2:11. If a man walking in a spirit of falsehood do lie, saying, I will prophesy unto thee of wine and strong drink, he shall even be the prophet of this people. And that's the kind of a prophet they want. Now, Micah goes back contemporary with Isaiah. Now, if a prophet comes along and prophesies of strong drink and wine and all that, oh, that's the kind of a prophet we want. And I look at Micah
over here in the third chapter in verse 8, Micah says, "But as for me, I am full of power by the Spirit of Jehovah and of judgment and of might to declare unto Jacob his transgression and to Israel his sin." Now, what was the difference between the true prophet and the false prophet? The false prophet preached what they wanted to hear. The true prophet told them of their sins and tried to turn them back to God. Now, that marks the difference between a true preacher and a false preacher today. A preacher today may preach what he preaches may be true, but it's nice little platitudes that the people want to hear. It's about love and sweet things and joy and peace and all that, when there is no peace. Now, the true preacher will preach to the sins of the people, the things they need to hear, if there are things they need to hear, and generally are. That marks the difference. A preacher today who simply tickles the ears of the people, even though he's quoting Scripture, is as much a false preacher or teacher as that man who gets up and teaches something that flatly contradicts the Word of God. That's what Micah is pointing out. Now, that's what you had in Jeremiah also, these false fellows. Told them what they wanted. That's what he says here. Notice what he says. He says, "They have not uncovered their wicked iniquity to bring back their captivity. But," he said, "they have seen for the false oracles and causes of banishment." They've given you false oracles, false prophets. What do you want to hear? And that's a great difference. I don't mean a preacher ought to be up just stomping around and skinning people all the time. I don't mean that. What I mean, if there's sin, it needs to be met. It needs to be met. And if he doesn't meet it, you got no business trying to stand behind the Bible and preach. Let him get out. Get out. I made this statement. Now, you remember, I don't know, I made a comment to you. That when a man stands behind the Bible to preach, he can have no personal friendship. Every man must look exactly alike to him. Every one. He must preach to the individual, and not pass over some because he's a friend, stand somebody up where he doesn't like him. He can't do that. He's a false teacher. All that pass by cut their hands at thee. That is a Zion. They hiss and wag their head at the daughter of Jerusalem, saying, "Is this the city that men call the perfection of beauty, the joy of the whole earth? Why, it ever just a running track." Here the people pass by, they wag their head at it and their hand at it. Go on by, "Is this that great city? Look at it now. All thine enemies have opened their mouth wide against thee." The prophet's now speaking, I think, Mike. "They hiss and gnash the teeth. They say, 'We've swallowed her up. Certainly this is the day that we looked for.'" Now, that's the enemies up there in the first line. All thine enemies. The enemies are saying, "This is the day we looked for. We have found it. We have seen it. We looked for it. We found it. We've seen it." They're rejoicing in the destruction of Jerusalem. They're glad it's restored. They want it to be destroyed ever since they came in and took it away upon the Jebusites, back there a century before. And I said, "But now know it." They said, "We have done it. We have done it." But now look at what the prophet said. "Jehovah hath done that which he purposed. He hath fulfilled the word that he commanded in the days of old." That's back in Deuteronomy 28, we mentioned a while ago. Back those old time prophets and what they had said. "He hath thrown down and hath not pitied. And he hath caused the enemy to rejoice over thee. He hath exalted the horn of thine enemy." Now remember, it was God that you snubbed. It's God who brought the judgment. Always that way. It'll always be that way. Now, you got the idea that this, "Well, it's going to turn me against God. I can't," that's what the infidel said, "I can't worship that kind of a God." He doesn't know anything about it. The same love that causes God to save an individual hates evil and is going to destroy it. Going to destroy it. It's the love of that which is right that prompts him to act as he does. "Their heart cries unto the Lord, O wall of the border of Zion. Let tears run down like a river day and night. Give thyself no respite. Let not the apple of thine eye see. Arise, cry out in the night. At the beginning of the watch, pour out thy heart like water before the face of the Lord, lift up thy hands toward him, for the light of thy young children that faint for hunger at the head of every street. That seems to have been what they were told back there when they could have done something about it. But they didn't listen. So he's calling attention to that. See, O Jehovah, and behold, to whom thou hast done thus, shall the women eat their fruit, the children that are dandled in the hand. We'll come to that again in the fourth chapter, in verse 10 later. Shall the priest and the prophet be slain in the sanctuary of the Lord? The youth of the old man lie on the ground in the streets. My virgins and my young men are fallen with a sword. Thou hast slain them in the day of thine anger. Thou hast slaughtered and my pity. Thou hast called as in the day of a solemn assembly. My terror is on every side. And in the day of the solemn assembly, you call the peoplehood. Now this time you call a terror instead of the people to a rejoicing. My terror is on every side. And there was none that escaped or remained in the day of Jehovah's anger. Those that I have been and brought up at mine enemy concerned. That is the children of Jerusalem, the children of Zion, that had been dandled on the knee, now destroyed, carried into captive. It's an awful picture. It's an awful picture. But what is really, it's an awful picture of what? Sin, isn't it? Don't forget that. And what, when you're reading this and thinking about this awful picture over here, what is that really a picture of? The awfulness of sin that brings that kind of a judgment. So while we're looking at this, we are criticizing God for what he did over here, now look back here. What the people did and what they were told and how they were warned and how they rejected God and spit in his face, what anything else could happen. Judgment had to come. Let's stop and get a drink before we go to that fourth chapter. Or stop and get a good drink.